But if you tame me, we will start to need each other. You will be the only boy in the world for me, and I'll be the only fox in the world for you. My life will be filled with sunshine. I'll know the sound of footsteps that will be different from all the rest. Other footsteps send me back underground. Yours will call me out of my burrow like music. And then look, do you see the wheat fields over there? Your hair is the same color gold as those wheat fields. So it will be wonderful when you've tamed me. The wheat, which is golden, will remind me of you. And I'll love the sound of the wind in the wheat. All right, said the little prince. I'll tame you, but what should I do? You have to be very patient, the fox answered. First, you sit down a little ways away from me, over there in the grass. I'll watch you out of the corner of my eye, and you won't say anything. Language is a source of misunderstanding. But day by day, you'll be able to sit a little closer, a little each day. And so it was that the little prince tamed the fox. And there was something else the fox taught the little prince. Taming doesn't work right unless the little prince comes back every day at exactly the same time. You must observe certain rites, the fox tells him, regular times for meetings, so that the meetings are honored as special and can be anticipated. In other words, real friendship takes time, regular time. Now, as applied to the analytic process, this isn't too hard to decipher, right? I mean, the analytic time and space is set aside every week as a regular time. It's set aside. It's sacred time, time out of time. And that's part of the commitment. And people who work deeply in our work know that if you want to honor the psyche and the process, you have to establish regular sessions. You can't just try to schedule a session every once in a while with somebody. It doesn't work very well. Sometimes that's not possible, of course, so then we do the best we can. Also, the fox says, if you have these rites, you'll start to get excited in anticipation of the next meeting. If your new friend doesn't show up at the appointed time, well, then you'll discover what it costs to be happy. If your new friend doesn't show up at the appointed time, well, you'll discover what it costs to be happy. Right here, we have a little bit of progress on the road to innocence-acquiring experience. There will be disappointments. If you're going to attach to somebody, you make yourself vulnerable to loss. That's what he's saying here. In other words, the inevitable cost of attaching to a human being is a certain kind of suffering and anxiety because you don't predict. We all live in mortal bodies and we might not come back. That's just the way it is. I'm going to complete this story and then we're going to take a break. So those of you who can wait for about 10 minutes, we'll take a break and then we'll come back because I know this is way too long. And at least 24 of you told me in great gratitude that I'd taken the break yesterday, so we're going to do it again. Finally, the little prince must take leave, and the fox says this. Oh, I shall cry. It's your own fault, said the little prince. I didn't wish you any harm, but you made me tame you. Yes, indeed, said the fox. But you're going to cry, said the little prince. That is so, said the fox. Then it hasn't helped you in any way. It has helped me, said the fox. Because of the color of the wheat fields. I can barely get that line out. Because of the color of the wheat fields. Now that's what's in that gap. And if you understand that line, and we'll talk about it a lot, you understand what this story is all about. It comes back around in another iteration as star music at the end of the story, so I'll continue. The implications of this beautiful passage for our work in therapy and in life deserve some reflection. First, the fox is describing the way love lights up the world and its exquisite beauty. If the little prince tames him, the beauties of the world, wheat fields, for example, will remind him of his special friend. The world will become radiant, like his feelings of pleasure in the presence of his friend, and every moment will share that sense of splendor in the grass, as Wordsworth says, experienced by the innocent child in his great ode. Of course, this brings with it the prospect of loss, and that is the inevitable price for happiness. Such hope-filled love, with its reactivation of lost innocence and its prospect of a union between the worlds, frequently appears in the early stages of our work in therapy and has been discussed in general under the topic of idealization. How we conceptualize the idealizing and hope-filled energy and love that comes up in early stages of new relationships in therapy is a topic that we need to talk about, but not in extensive now. There are different ways of thinking about it, but the Jungian way of thinking about it is very, very clear, and that is that this loving, idealizing energy and hope-filled attachment that starts to begin in the beginning of the psychoanalytic work is the emergence of the self, of the divine vehicle for carrying the transpersonal aspects of the psyche forward and linking them up with actual relationships. So Melanie Klein was highly suspicious of idealization and saw it as a defense. That's how backward she got it. I mean, it's really appalling. And of course, there are idealizations that are defense. But we have to be very careful that we differentiate between the two kinds. Second, the fox is describing how the idealizing love that begins as one's innocence is activated and is activated in the early stages, gradually gives way to more mature forms of relatedness in which innocence is glimpsed at a higher level. This is facilitated, says the fox, by an intervening symbol, something shared that is objectively beautiful, wheat fields. The symbol allows for that simultaneous presence and absence of the object that makes for separation and individuation. The fancy word for it is object constancy. Okay. I want to return to our story then. We'll come back to some of these conversations. After his description of taming, the fox shares some of his innermost secrets with the little prince. And these are also subcategories under the Wheatfield idea. The first is that you can't really understand a person unless you've tamed them. So much for the DSM-5. The second is that it is only with the heart that one can see clearly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. The third is that one must spend time with what one has tamed. And the final secret is that you become responsible for what you've tamed, responsible forever. The little prince suddenly realizes that he's responsible for his rose back home because he has watered her and sheltered her and spent time with her, and she is unique in all the world. He has tamed her. The fox's instructions about taming remind me of a poignant story, which I think I will tell you now, even though it interrupts our story briefly. It's about Shelley Alahante. Do you know her writings at all? She's a Los Angeles analyst who's written a lot of personal things about her own life. She was obviously a very introverted little girl. She went through a time when she was a child when she was completely mute. The family in this story had moved from New York City to Athens, Greece, and little Shelley had to leave her wonderfully attuned grandmother for a raucous, boisterous atmosphere in her new home. where she spent much of her time hiding under the table or behind a potted plant that they had in the living room. This is the memory of her childhood in Greece, under the table or behind the potted plant. Most of the people in this raucous family dealt with her by trying to cajole her into talking. And then, quote, one day an uncle came over to meet me for the first time, and he did something different. Everything was loud and boisterous, and I was hiding behind a tree on the balcony as usual. He came over, sat down next to me, picked up a toy bird, played with it silently, and then went home without ever having said a word to me. For a long time after that, I would talk only to him. I instinctively knew by the quality of his presence that he would find me through the interior of his own heart. Paradoxically, the message I got by his silence was that he would value my words. So I felt safe to speak. Neither of us could have articulated what the problem was, why I wasn't talking, but on another level, in an invisible, silent way, we understood each other. I consider that my first experience with analysis. She had a good analysis. I think of the Quaker honoring of silence and what can happen in silence between two people. Shelley's uncle had tamed her. He had found her through the interior of his own heart. The author doesn't mention the toy bird that her uncle played with in this vignette. But one can imagine that this animated nonverbal gesture was crucially important to little Shelley and her ultimate attachment to the uncle. It was kind of an intermediate third. And as psychoanalysts, I think we have to find a way to meet our traumatically wounded patients in this space. Otherwise, we will never meet the shy, mute, and innocent children hiding inside them. We have to open our hearts to the invisible realities of the human soul and learn the value of silence and poetry and embodied presence without interpretation. There is no rational diagnostic understanding of a patient without first taming them. That is the lesson of the fox. Okay, I think we're going to take a break there and complete the story of how the little prince meets the pilot and the pilot meets the little prince as soon as we come back. Okay? Thank you. This is an intermission.